Welcome to San Fran. I'm Larry Nassett. Recently, a friend of mine came back from a business trip to the White House. This was in the rather early days of the Clinton era, the pre-Durbin days. Anyway, she was appalled, my friend was, having met the White House staff, because, she said, they're just us. It's us. It's the people we went to school with. It's the baby boomers. I suppose she's right, those long-haired, pot-smoking, Vietnam draft-dodging, Jimi Hendrix records in the attic, stashing, vegetable-chewing, nanny tax-avoiding baby boomers now run the country. What this says for the future of the republic, I don't know. I can guess what it means, though, for the future of public discourse. After all, if the baby boomers have seized the White House, it can't be long before they take control of the television stations, the newspapers, the movies, and all other forms of communication. It means we will all have to talk about what they want to talk about. Here's a prediction. Within a decade, millions and millions of menopausal women will be having unprecedented numbers of hot flashes in boardrooms, bedrooms, and newsrooms all over the country. And of course, being baby boomers, they're going to want to discuss it. We will all want to discuss it. Today on Soundprint, producer Karen Michelle gets a jump on the future with the following program, which she calls My Dinner with Menopause.
Right. I would suggest, ladies, that the cooking move from a red wine to kind of symbolize.
I think red is a wonderful color.
This is a Passover.
This is a Passover.
This is a big Passover.
Eight women gathered for dinner at my home in Brooklyn, New York. This is the annotated version of that meal, of our dinner with menopause.
Well, I would like to make a toast to all of us. The way I learned about menstruation was in elementary school when I was like 10, 11. A group of girls formed a club to find out about it.
Really, like called one.
Like it's called Comeric. That's the first initial of each of our names.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
That's cool.
And I was the youngest of the group. Uh-huh. Okay. And our initiation was that you had to drink a bowl of milk like a cat. Uh-huh. Now, I always hated milk, but I do love wine. Uh-huh. So as our welcome, and Helen Seltzer will be fine, here's to the this generation of finding out.
Yes,
here, here.
We are quite different, Portia, Laura, Valeria, Carol, Susan, Helen, Yukako, and I. Only Helen has gone through menopause. The rest of us of various professions and not too dissimilar ages are still trying to define our expectations and inform our fears. We've been reading up.
Too many successful transitions in life, right?
One of the things I'm curious about is what any of your mothers ever told you about menopause. Did anybody ever talk to you in your family about this?
Not my mother.
No,
my
no way.
But she never talked about
you.
She never talked about sex. She never talked about babies. She never talked about menopause. She never talked about any of those things. Yeah. None of those transitions were discussed.
Well, my mother called some months ago and started talking to me about menopause. My mother and I have never had an intimate relationship. Ever. I mean, when I was a teenager, she would ask me about my periods because she was afraid I was screwing around and I would get pregnant. I mean, all true,
mm-hmm.
but, you know.
Yeah.
She so now she's asking again. It's like I'm a teenager again.
Yes, good intuition.
Well, you are now that age, and I'm wondering that I feel medicine has made great strides and things would be better, and I also wanted to know how heredity plays a factor in how you react.
My mother was 48 when she had a hysterectomy and menopause.
I was never as happy afterwards in my life. I was told I would be very depressed. I wasn't so at all. I felt positively liberated. My sex life was better.
Why did you feel liberated?
I felt free because I didn't feel I would ever become pregnant again. I had a terrible fear of pregnancy. And I never wanted an unexpected pregnancy again. I have to be unfortunately very frank about that. The only disadvantage of the actual technical surgery was that my abdomen was not as firm afterwards. And I felt being vain, I didn't like that very much.
I really came in Catholic families. Menstruating, menopause, women's cycles, everything was so very much related to childbearing and to procreation. They were seen very clearly that way, in a way that was very dehumanizing, I think. I mean, I don't think I got to a point of having any emotions about any of those things till I was in my late 20s, when it was, I had been pregnant and had a miscarriage, and I started to suddenly feel connected to all the rest of the women in the world instead of just thinking and talking about these cycles in a very detached way. I mean, there was a very detached feeling, and all the talk in our family was around having babies. Constantly having babies. You were getting ready to have a baby. You were able to have a baby. You were about to have a baby. You had just lost a baby.
And after menopause, you can't
have any more babies. You better hurry up and get married again so you can have one more baby. But there was such an emphasis on procreation and a woman's cycle being totally related to being able to bear children. And in our family, it was never talked about.
So you're the only person here with a child?
I am.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
that's interesting.
And that is something I think makes menopause more difficult, at least for me.
Why? Maybe so.
Because of regret.
Huh?
Regret. I'm not at menopause yet, but I'll be there within 5 years.
Regret about what?
Not having children.
Children?
A child. Yeah.
I don't.
You've never dressed?
Never.
Me either.
No.
I don't say all this. I do shiver. And it came late. I mean, it's very recent.
No,
it's not. I know. New reproductive technology will take care of it. Don't worry about it.
That's right.
No, I know. That's 45.
It is still possible, yes, it is still possible to have a baby while you're in perimenopause.
Mm-hmm.
It is still possible if you have one egg, you can still,
oh, there it is, oh, whoops,
I'm gone.
I feel sadness.
Menopause officially means that there are no longer any eggs left in the ovary. And what that interprets to is that women are deprived of estrogen, so that menopause is synonymous with estrogen deprivation.
Dr. Cecilia Schmidt-Sorosi is a gynecologist.
Estrogen deprivation, but menopause signals the fact that there are no more eggs. So reproductive life or reproduction is now over, and as a consequence
people
of
people equate menopause with not being fertile. And so that,
which is,
I guess, what we're talking about, the quote, day of reckoning kind of thing.
Yeah. It's a marker. It's a marker of the fact that life is finite and possibilities are finite. And, you know, you cross this bridge and there's certain things you can't do anymore. Does it open up other possibilities?
When menopause came for me, it was such a relief not to have to worry about it that I was excited and went into the most fruitful period of my life. And it's been going that way ever since.
You're looking very good.
Yeah, but okay, now there you brought up something interesting to me.
Yes.
It's this looking good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I realized that
Karen hot now.
Huh?
You're hot now with a question.
No, because it struck me that I now look at women differently than I used to.
I do too.
And it bothers me that I do. I look at women and I say, oh, she looks really good for her age.
No, that's not what I meant.
No, but it's what I pick up in this.
It's trouble.
Why do you do that?
I want to stop doing that.
You're going to overcome.
You know, the first thing is the awareness that I'm doing that.
Yeah. But why do you think you do it?
Because I still think I'm 20. I still think I'm a kid.
No, you're not. This is one thing I do remember my mother telling me, and that is that you don't feel like an old person.
Mm-hmm.
She said, I first knew that I was getting old when somebody, rather, she mentioned the name, held the door open for me. I don't know that I'm out of sight here with my age. I'm just me.
Helen's 65.
The mean age is 50 yeah. point something.
The mean
age.
That's mean. I was mean at 40.
But the stuff I've been reading, I mean, basically from, you know, 45 on, honey,
anytime.
There you are.
Yeah.
And if you have, you're childless and you've been ovulating incessantly, then it's earlier than your mother.
I just want that information.
I think I was just
ovulating incessantly.
I'm working to say that.
My friends like Karen never call and say hello. They're constantly still bleeding.
Put it out.
you've been having kind of horrendous experience.
Right. And
Well, it went through, because I know that everybody else doesn't know what you've been going through. Bleeding a lot.
Yeah.
Bleeding a lot.
Oh,
yeah. So, you know, there are periods when you just, like, I remember once I was at a business dinner, and it was crucial. It was so important. And I felt really focused, and I was so, I knew this was it, and it all was working very well, and it was time, and it was over. And I felt something was wrong with this seat, I said to myself.
Oh,
and I had on tights and a skirt and a long sweater, and I stood up, and my seat in the restaurant was flooded to the very bottom.
Oh, my God.
And I thought, now what do I do? I mean, what do I do? What? The protocol now.
You say, oh, I spilled my wine.
There's no way. Everybody in
the hospital has spilled my wine.
I was devastated.
I spilled everybody's wine.
I was devastated and humiliated, and I thought I'm going to bleed to death right here. I was on tour with Pete. It was completely frightening, and it happened other times after that. One time camping about 8,000 miles or 10,000 miles to the north of here, and you know, and once in Cambodia. I mean, you're just there, and suddenly you're bleeding to death. I mean, there's no end of it, and it's a gush, a rush, and it lasts 10 days, 2 weeks, one whole month.
Oh, my
God.
Continuously?
So
that's awful.
It was.
Do you need transfusion?
Just
for the hemorrhage,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, you really have to drink a lot of fluids just to stay with your body, with your body's volume, so you don't. And you know, and then you either get a lot of DNCs or hysterectomy. You try to balance that in some way. So I was desperate.
Okay, that leads me to this other thing. The whole notion of the
I'm going to get back to fear too, but let's
please go fear again. Well, change is your case. Go.
But I was thinking about what you were saying, because what I fear is sort of being swallowed up by little mind. You know, if you live in big mind, to me, you can be in a continuous state of wonderment, of awe. Of spontaneity, of gratitude. You're here, you know, and all of this miracle is with you. But as this started to happen to me, I became bogged down in little mind. My little hemorrhage, my little migraine, my hot flash, my new appreciating my death. I mean,
my
it's my distemper, it's in my anger. And I'm this horrible, petty person, and I don't know what's going on, because I'm miserable. So, when Elizabeth said, I'm going to forget. All the my little petty self-indulgent, depressing things. And I fear, am I going to stay like this a long time? Because I'm missing out on these other things.
Does this mean we can get to sex now?
Blood sex,
rock and roll.
Sex. Oh, is part of menopause being turned off? Is that supposed to be part of it?
Turned off what?
Sexually. You're she's losing her desire?
What do you have to worry about from it, for one thing? So
yeah.
You can do anything you want. As often as you want. I mean, no. I mean, it does not affect your sexual drive at all.
Okay.
I mean, I haven't found anything yet that does, so...
Dr. Lonnie Barbach is a psychologist and sex therapist. She wrote a book about menopause. Since the changes in estrogen for a lot of women mean that there's less elasticity in the vagina and that pain with intercourse will occur if there's not a kind of continuing lubrication. And, you know, it's like use it or lose it, really. And I thought that, you know, if women don't have partners, which a lot of women don't as we get older, and they want to maintain the ability to have intercourse, then masturbating with something in the vagina becomes very important. Barbach says you can use a dildo or just go to the grocery store.
Cucumbers, carrots, and something else, provided you remove the insecticide. The point was only that you just keep on contracting. That was the point she was trying to make.
Stimulate
your muscles. Is that you keep your muscles elastic. That's the only point she was making.
I knew there was a scientific basis for what I did. I knew it. I knew it was out there.
Now, and now, once you broadcast, Karen, fail the cucumbers across the country. Organic gardening.
But Cecilia Schmidt-Sorosi says veggies aren't the fountain of youth.
The one thing that doesn't seem to go away is vaginal dryness. That gets progressively worse over the years. So
hormone replacement therapy will not take care of
it? No, that will take care of it. Without hormone replacement therapy, the vaginal dryness gets worse and worse.
That's without chemically replacing the declining estrogen.
Is if we have vaginal dryness and then sexual intercourse decreases because of vaginal dryness, and the vagina gets even more stenotic and more closed and is unused to intercourse. So it becomes less and less useful.
May I interrupt?
Sure, Mom.
I have tremendous vaginal dryness, which is such a problem, a real problem, that I have to use vaginal cream, and I have to use that frequently, and an external one and an internal one. Yes, I do have that very, very badly.
One of the things that I kind of liked here is that you basically say you don't have to get exotic. You can go to the grocery store. You can go to the drugstore. You can use, I think in your video, you have olive oil.
Back to sex therapist, Barbach.
There's a product called Replenz, which is an over-the-counter moisturizer that keeps the tissues moist and helps with lubrication and painful intercourse. There's Astroglide, which is a wonderful name, I think, for a lubricant, and it's a very good one.
I think one of the worst aspects of going through menopause is not the experience. It happened to me very quickly. I think I'm almost out of it. In fact, in my family, when I asked my mother, what was your menopause like, she said, I think it was on a Wednesday. But
how old are you? 40?
Yeah, I was very lucky.
How old are you?
I'm 49. But I think one of the worst aspects of it is suddenly you become the target, you become a market. You know, suddenly, there's all these people trying to sell you things. My gynecologist, for example. I went to my gynecologist, and I changed on gynecologist when it started to happen to me. I wasn't happy with my previous one, because he was always quoting me death statistics.
No.
Okay. I'd walk into her office, and she'd say, how old are you? And I'd say, 49. He said, did you know that 95% of 49-year-old women get death? And he goes, all right, but I changed gynecologist.
Bad attitude.
And this one did a test on me. She said, "Oh, well, I'm going to do a test to make sure you're actually going through menopause." And it turned out that it was. And immediately she started trying to sell me HRT.
What's that?
Yes, HRT is the hormone therapy, estrogen therapy.
Hormone replacement therapy.
How old is this women gynecologist?
She's about my age. And she told me to go out and buy a book. She said that, you know, I was at risk to have osteoporosis, so that if I had heart disease in my family, which I do, that I'm at greater risk of heart disease. So we're in premenopausal, I was thinking, oh, well, my family had no problems. They went through this pretty easily. And in fact, for me, it really wasn't a big deal. Now I'm so stressed out. I'm reading books about it. Do I have to take this estrogen, which I'm really sort of biologically opposed to?
What I'd like to do is go through this form with you, and some of the questions may appear to be unrelated to anything gynecological from a Western medical perspective. But in Chinese medicine, there are many, many interactions between different systems. And often, information will be elicited by asking questions about, for instance, the respiratory system, which is actually relevant to menopause. So
Susan Paul is a registered nurse, licensed acupuncturist, and Chinese herbalist. Laura and I went to see her.
In Chinese medicine, what is menopause referred to? I'm sure it's not menopause. No,
they actually refer to it as the drying up of the sea of blood. But that's the term that refers to the phenomenon of menopause. And the Cheng Mo is an extra meridian, which is called the Sea of Blood. And it wraps around the uterus, and it goes up through the digestive organs. So So there is a reference to it, but it's not seen as, you know, an illness or a crisis or a pathological state. It's just not seen that way in Chinese culture.
I wanted to know if there is an alternative method to ensure that my bones won't weaken and that I'll stay healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm here.
Okay.
Now, have you had any changes that are indicating to you that you're in menopause? How are your periods now?
So I just took out these are just some of the formulas I use with menopausal women. For you, I would highly recommend, you know, the Women's Precious and the Quiet Contemplative, which is 6-Flavor Romani, which is another very ancient formula. And then what I recommend for any woman who's approaching menopause is the Western herb called Siberian ginseng. It is not ginseng, and I do not recommend ginseng for menopausal women or anybody. I don't recommend anyone start taking ginseng on their own, and I don't recommend that anyone take any herb on their own unless they really know what they're doing, because herbs can cause problems like anything else. Anything in excess is potentially dangerous, and these are not just, it's not like you're eating the leaf, these are highly concentrated extracts. So ginseng can be very, very hot. It's the last thing most menopausal women need. You don't need to be hotter, you want to be cooler.
I have no doubt but that I'm going to want therapy. It's not even a question in my mind. And I want to see women that says that unequivocally I have no problem saying. Because I really don't want to go through, I don't want to go through it. I don't want to be, I'm moody enough. I don't want to be moodier than I already am. I'm not wildly moody, but I'm, and I really don't want that. I don't want that kind of disruption. That horrifies me.
But HRT doesn't come without side effects, too. You know, HRT can cause depression. HRT can cause bloating. HRT can cause all kinds of things that are not going to make you feel great about yourself.
Mm.
I don't see what the point is in tampering with the natural body process. I think menopause is something that I read somewhere someone put it very well. It's not a disease. Menopause is not a disease. Why should we bombard it with drugs? And I think what makes me so frustrated is that I just don't think, as Karen was saying, that anybody has done enough research, male doctors or female doctors for that matter, have done enough research for us to know if HRT really is the answer. It does come with a whole host of side effects that are not...
I'll take them.
I love bloating. That's fabulous compared to what I did.
Right.
I started replacement therapy 2 days ago. I'm as happy as a clam.
I've had a night's sleep.
I have not been adolescent for 48 hours. I'm delirious.
I think it's Protestants, pardon me, you know, the other Protestants here, but to think that suffering is good because it's normal. I mean, suffering stinks. You know, it should be eliminated if you can eliminate it.
It depends upon what a woman is looking at hormone replacement therapy to do. Cecilia Schmidt-Cerosi.
She just wants to get over this very severe time in her life. It's not the time when she should be having hot flushes, when she should have vaginal dryness, and wants to consider doing it for a couple of years. And we'll take any of the long-term benefits that go along with it, a little bit of heart protection, a little bit of bone protection. Then maybe she's looking at 5 or 6 years. But if a woman comes into it and says, I want the maximum benefit, I really want to maintain my bone structure, I want to be able to do as much as I can, then we don't really can't stop the estrogen. Because once you stop it, the clock starts again. Menopause restarts when the estrogen goes away.
But it doesn't start back at the point when you started taking
it. It does. You see, what estrogen replacement therapy does, it kind of puts a person in limbo. So bone mass is no longer lost. In fact, sometimes there's some gain in bone mass. And heart protection is, again, the same as before you had menopause. So if you stop the estrogen, then the clock starts over again.
So it rewinds.
It sort of rewinds, and the film rewinds and goes back, or the tape rewinds and goes back to where it was before.
I saw my mother got breast cancer from estrogen replacement therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The other mention of menopause in my family was not directly menopause, mentioning menopause by my mother, but my mother coming and to visit and saying she started estrogen therapy and she felt so great, she felt like a kid again.
Mm-hmm.
She had zits, she was thrilled. And then the next visit was breast cancer.
What year was that?
2 years later.
How old are you, Susan?
49. So I doubt that I would be interested in
therapy.
Depending, now I've had two serious hot flashes for the first time yesterday and today. Yesterday I was so disoriented I could hardly cross the street. I mean,
it caused a tremendous disorientation.
I crossed at red. When the door was leaving, and when the light changed, it was red, I crossed. Oh my God, this is dangerous. Uh-huh. I could drive a car and get killed.
The new phrase that seems to be flying all around saying, they're not hot flashes, they're power surges.
Physiologist Dr. Freddie Cronenberg has been studying hot flashes for more than a dozen years. Though she hasn't had any yet, most women eventually do.
There are very few things that we've found so far that predispose women to hot flashes. I think one of the biggest things, if you look at your mother, and what, because there are genetic components to all of these things, and smoking, women who smoke, smoking is one of the few things that we know puts women into menopause early. It puts women into menopause 1 to 2 years earlier if you're a smoker. One of the only things we know that does. It affects your estrogen levels and will most likely, therefore, predispose you to having earlier hot flashes and perhaps having hot flashes when you may not have otherwise, because there are studies that show that women with lower estrogen levels have more hot flashes than women with whose estrogen levels are a little bit higher. And interestingly, some other things that we're finding now affect estrogen levels are alcohol. Certain alcohols, like bourbon, have plant estrogens in them. So there are certain things that I think we're going to just begin to find a whole range of things that are going to be, we're not even aware that they're affecting our hormone levels.
You mean if you're going to drink bourbon?
Give you a little extra shot of estrogen.
Fortune and I over dinner when I wrote an off-the-rag-rag.
Title's good anyway.
Off the record. Hot flashes, no lubrication, dry skin, it's our generation.
Oh, that's that was a good hot flashes, no lubrication,
dry skin, it's our generation. And then we had...
very hopeful. God is depressed.
And you are so young.
Don't give up sex. That's what I would say. Keep on.
Motherly advice.
I think you're still young. Sometimes immature, I think, but you act young. So I'm not worried about you in that respect. I just hope you have a good aging process, a comfortable one. As a matter of fact, I think of you every day about this and say a little prayer that you have what I call an easy menopause. Because that's important. I don't want you to have any physical or emotional or marital problems.
My Dinner with Menopause was produced by Karen Michelle. The engineer was Manoli Weatherall. Soundprint is technical producer Anna Maria de Freitas, senior producer Luna Ellis, researcher Debbie Morris, and production assistant Robin Wise. Our executive producer is Moira Rankin. I'm Larry Massett. Write us with your ideas and comments. Write Soundprint, 2216 North Charles Street, Baltimore, Maryland, 21218. Cassettes are $10, and if you'd like to order a cassette with a credit card, call us at 410, area code 410-516-0833. That's 410-516-0833. Soundprint is produced by the Johns Hopkins University with support from the National Endowment for the Arts, the National Science Foundation, and radio stations KCRW-FM in Santa Monica, California, and WEBR-AM in Buffalo, New York. Additional support for this program is provided by this and other National Public Radio member stations and the NPR Information Fund, whose contributors include the Bullitt Foundation. This is